An Osho Talk. When the Shoe Fits. Talks on the stories of Trunk Desert, number 7.
Jiangsu told the story of the autumn floods. The autumn floods had come. Thousands of wild torrents poured furiously into the Yellow River. It surged and flooded its banks until, looking across, you could not tell an ox from a horse on the other side. Then the river god laughed, delighted to think that all the beauty in the world had fallen into his keeping. So downhill he swung until he came to the ocean. There he looked out over the waves, towards the empty horizon in the east, and his face fell. Gazing out at the far horizon, he came to his senses, and he murmured to the ocean god, "Well, the proverb is right. He who has got himself 100 ideas thinks he knows more than anyone else. Such a one am I. Only now do I see what they mean by expanse." The ocean god replied, "Can you talk about the sea to a frog in a well? Can you talk about ice to dragonflies? Can you talk about the way of life to a doctor of philosophy?"
Life is experience and not a theory. It needs no explanation. It is there in all its glory, just to be lived, enjoyed, delighted. It is not a riddle. It is a mystery. A riddle is one which can be solved. A mystery is one which can never be solved. A mystery is one you can become one with it. You can dissolve into it. You can melt into it. And yourself can become mysterious. This is the difference between philosophy and religion. Philosophy thinks life is a riddle. You have to solve it, find explanations, theories, doctrines. Philosophy thinks there is going to be some answer. Life is a question mark. And one has to work hard at it. Of course, if you take life as a question mark, your effort becomes intellectual. The very assumption that life is a question leads you into more and more intellectual efforts. In search of an answer, you fall upon theories. Religion says to take life as a question is basically false. It is not a question. It is there with no question mark. It is there as an open secret. It is an invitation. You have to become a guest. You have to move into it. It is ready and welcoming. Don't fight with it. It is not a question. Don't try to solve it. It is not a riddle. Come and become one with it, and you will know it. The knowing will come from your totality, not from the intellect. Intellect is a partial effort. Life needs you to be totally with it, to flow with it, so one that you cannot feel what is what. You cannot feel where you end and where life begins. The whole life becomes you. The whole you becomes life. This is what salvation is. It is not a solution. It is a salvation. This is what Hindus have called moksha. It is not a theory, a conclusion. It is a totally different way to live with existence. It is not head-oriented. You become really headless. You lose all distinctions. The periphery dissolves. You are just like a drop in the ocean. You lose your boundaries and you gain the cosmic boundaries, which are infinite. The first thing to understand, not to take life as a question. Once you take it as a question, you will be in trouble. You have already moved in a wrong path. It is going to be a cul-de-sac. Somewhere in some theory, you will be stuck. Everybody is stuck somewhere in a theory. And then it is very difficult to drop the theory. You cling to it. Because the question scares you. At least the theory is some consolation. At least you feel that you know. You don't know. Mind cannot know. Mind can only theorize. It can go on spinning words faster and faster. It can play with words, arrange them, but they are all interpretations, not the real, but your interpretation of it. It is just like a map. You see the map of India? You can go on carrying that map with you. And you can go on thinking that you are carrying India in your pocket. But the map is not the country. You can even have a photograph of a rose. But that photograph is just a photograph. It carries nothing of the living phenomenon that a rose is. You can have a theory about the rose. What a rose is. Look at a child. He is still without a mind. He opens his eyes and looks at the world. Bring a rose to him. He does not know the name. He cannot label it. He cannot categorize it. He cannot say what it is. Still the rose is there. The colors flood the child. The beauty of the rose surrounds him. The fragrance reaches to his very heart. He does not know what it is, but he passes through a living moment. You tell the child, this is a rose. And never again the experience will be the same. Never again the child will be able to experience what the mystery of the rose was. Whenever next time a rose comes before him, he will say, this is a rose. Now he will carry the word. You have made him poor. He was very rich. The whole rose was there. And he could only live it. There was no other way to describe, to define. A rose is a rose is a rose. You cannot say what it is, this or that. The child was silent. There was no functioning of the mind. The mind was not there. There was no barrier. The heart of the rose melted into the heart of the child. The heart of the child melted into the heart of the rose. The child even could not say where he ends and the rose begins, and where the rose ends and he begins. There were no boundaries. They had become one in that moment of ah. For a single moment, they were not two. Oneness happened. But you have told that this is a rose. Now, never again the experience will be there. The moment the rose will be there, immediately the mind will say, this is a rose. The mystery is lost. Now there is an answer. Now the child knows. What absurdity. Now you will say the child is growing in his knowledge. Just the opposite is the case. Before you told him what is what, he knew. But he knew with his totality. It was not knowledge. It was experiencing. But then you thought he is ignorant. Now you think he knows because he carries a word in the mind. The word rose is not rose. The word God is not God. The word love is not love. These words we go on accumulating. Then there are clever minds who arrange these words into interpretations, theories and arguments. And the more argumentative, the more theoretical you become, the further you move from the rose. Then even echoes become impossible. Nothing comes to you. You never go to anything. You simply live in the mind, arranging words. I have heard one anecdote. Three Jews were going for a morning walk. Then they saw, they were friends, old friends, discussing many things. Then they saw a big car of the mayor passed by, and the mayor waved the hand and said, hello. Now there was trouble. The first one said, don't get so happy. He said, hello to me. And he has to. The two asked, what do you mean? The first one said, I have taken $10,000 from him. I have borrowed money, and for 2 years he is waiting and waiting. He had to say hello to me. The other one said, you are wrong. The hello has been said to me, and he has to. The reason is, I have borrowed him $10,000. He owes money to me, and he is always afraid of me. The moment he sees me, he gets scared. He has to. The third laughed, and the two others turned to him and said, what do you mean? Why are you laughing? He said, he has to say hello to me, not to you. There you both are wrong. Because neither he owes money to me, nor I owe money to him. Why not he should give me a clean hello? Once you start looking at reality through the mind, then everything becomes a problem. And then the ego starts interpreting. Then, you have only interpretations. You may have proofs for them. And those proofs may look reasonable. Only to you, not to anybody else. Because it is your ego that gives those interpretations. And you get more and more fixed in your interpretations because you have invested too much in your interpretations. If somebody says something which goes against Christianity, a Christian feels hurt. If somebody says something against Hinduism, a Hindu feels hurt. Why? If you are really a truth seeker, as religious people say they are, why should you get hurt? You should inquire. He may be right. But the ego is involved. It is not a question of Hinduism being right or wrong. It is a question of you being right or wrong. How you can be wrong? If you are wrong, then your image starts shaking. You cannot be wrong. Then for small things, very small things, you start fighting and arguing. But the real fight starts, the base of all fight is that you are fighting against life. With your answers, you are trying to conquer life. With your theories, you are trying to manipulate life. And you think if you know the theories, then you will be the master. Through knowledge, you strengthen your ego. So if somebody says there is no knowledge through the mind, the ego simply becomes deaf. It never listens it, because it is dangerous. The mind says, this is also a theory. The mind says, even anti-philosophy is a philosophy. Even Chuang Tzu is a philosopher. And then everything is settled. You again move into your interpretations. But remember, Chuang Tzu is not a philosopher. Neither am I. Philosophy is an attitude towards life. Attitude means a choice. Choice can only be of the fragmentary. A mystic never chooses. He looks at the whole without any choice on his part. He does not become a chooser. If you choose, then there is a problem immediately, because life is contradictory. Life exists through contradictions, and it is beautiful that how life manages the impossible. The night and the day exist as neighbors. Not only neighbors, really. The day melts into the night and becomes the night. The night melts again into the day and becomes the day. Love and hate exist together. The love melts and becomes the hate. The hate melts and becomes the love. Life and death exist together. Life goes on melting into death. And death goes on melting again into life. Existence is contradictory. There is a deep harmony between the opposite polarities. For the mind, this looks impossible, this cannot be. How the opposites can be together? How there can be a harmony between life and death? How can there be a harmony between hate and love? The mind says, love is never hate, and hate is never love. The mind says A is A, and B is B, and A is never B. Mind is logical, and life is contradictory. That's why they never meet together. So if you said this man is good, you cannot believe that this man is also bad. But life is such, the sinner adjusts in the saint, and the saint adjusts in the sinner. Only logic is clean cut with boundaries, definitions. Life is not clean cut. It moves into the opposite. Just look, you can be a saint this moment and a sinner the next. What is the problem for life? You can be a sinner this moment and next moment you can rise above it and become a saint. What is the problem? Look the inside phenomena, how things melt into the opposite, how opposites exist together. You were happy, happy like a flower, happy like a star, and suddenly you have become sad. Look, is this sadness something else from your happiness, or the same energy has become sadness? Who was happy and who is sad? Are there two persons within you? Are the same person, has its moods, and the same energy goes on moving. Sometimes it is sad, and sometimes it is happy. And if you understand this, then you don't create a contradiction between the two. And then your sadness has a flavor of happiness, and your happiness has a depth of sadness also. If a Buddha is sad, you will see a blissful feeling in his sadness. You will see an undercurrent of compassion. His sadness is beautiful. And if a Buddha is happy, and if you look deep and observe him, you will feel that in his happiness there is a depth. Just the same depth as there is always with sadness. His happiness is not shallow. With you is the problem. Whenever you are happy, you are shallow. Whenever you are sad, you may be deeper, less shallow. That's why laughter has a ring of shallowness. If you laugh, it seems you are laughing just on the periphery. But when you weep from the heart. It is easy to pretend laughter. It is very difficult to pretend tears. If they are not coming, it is impossible to bring them. You can force a smile. You cannot force tears. The more you will force, the more you will feel they are not coming. The more the eyes will be dry. Your sadness has a depth. Your laughter has a shallowness. But when Buddha laughs, he laughs as deeply as tears can go. And when he weeps so beautifully as you smile. The contradictions have lost their contradictoriness. They have become one. That's why to understand Buddha becomes difficult, because he has become as contradictory as existence itself. He is an absurdity. Now he is a mystery himself. A religious person is in search of the truth, a philosopher in search of interpretations. I have heard, once it happened, in a men's club, three professors of philosophy were discussing, a panel discussion, about what is most beautiful in a woman. The one philosopher says, it is the eyes. Eyes carry the whole of the woman. They are the most beautiful part in a feminine body. The second one said, I don't agree. Hairs are the most beautiful part of a feminine face and body. They give it the beauty and the mystery. And the third said, I don't agree with you. You both are wrong. It is the legs. The way a woman walks. The curves of her legs. Just the marbleness of her legs gives her the whole feminine beauty. One woman, old woman, who was listening very seriously about this discussion, elevated her nose and said, I must get out from here before one of you boys says the truth. A woman is not a philosopher. She has no theory. She knows. A religious person has an intuitive grasp. It is not intellect. It is his whole being. He feels rather than knows. And feeling hits the center. So one thing, that through philosophy, you will never reach the truth. You will go about and about and about. Umar Khayyam has said in his Rubaiyat, that when I was young, I did frequent doctrines and about and about they argued. And I came out from the same door I went in. Both, too many philosophers, too many saints he visited, they talked about and about. And he had to come back from the same door. Nothing is gained, only life is wasted. The sooner you become alert, the better. The sooner you become aware and drop out of the trap of philosophy, the better. Because life will not wait for you and your theories. It is moving fast. Soon death will happen, and you would die with your theories in your hand, and they won't help. They are just dead asses. Chuang Tzu says, live, don't think. That's all those who have known have always said, live, don't think. Drop thinking and become a being. Your totality is required. It is okay for science that you do with your head. It is okay for art that you do it by your heart. But for religion, you in your totality are required. If alone the head functions, it produces dry theories. If alone the heart functions, it creates fictions, dreams. Your totality is required. And when you function total, you reach the total that is universe. You become the same, and only the similar can know it. You become total in your small circle, and the total of the vast circle, the Brahma, is ready to receive you. One thing. Second thing before we enter in this parable is, mind is always conditioned. It cannot be unconditioned. Being is unconditioned. Mind is a conditioning. Mind is always trained by the society in which you live, trained by the experiences through which you pass. So a frog has a frog mind. He lives in a well, that is his whole universe. And you also have a frog mind, because you also live in a well, the well of the Hindu, the well of the Mohammedan, the well of the Christian or the Jew, and you have a boundary. It may be invisible, but then it is more dangerous, because visible boundaries you can jump out more easily. Invisible boundaries, you never feel them, that they are there, and they just cling to you. It is easier for a frog to come out of the well than for you to come out of your Hinduism, your Christianity. Difficult. Because the wall is invisible. A frog lives in a fixed wall, fixed well. He can jump out of it. You live in a well that you carry around you. It is like a climate, always surrounding you. It is your invisible personality. Wherever you go, you carry your well with you. You remain in it. Whatsoever you see through it. All interpretations come from the conditioning. And only one who is unconditioned can know the real, can know the true. A Hindu cannot know God, a Christian cannot know, a Jew cannot know. Because these are minds. Only someone who has come to realize that he is neither a Hindu, nor a Mohammedan, nor a Christian, only he. An Indian cannot know the truth. And a Chinese cannot know the truth. A Japanese cannot know the truth. Because truth has no boundaries. Nationalities create conditionings. They have to be dropped. One has to become absolutely naked before the truth, with no clothes, no conditionings. Neither a Hindu, nor an Indian, nor a Mohammedan, nor a Chinese. Just a being, a pure being, with nothing to cling. Then you are out of the well. And if you cling to the well, how can you reach to the ocean? And if you carry the conditioning of the well, even if the ocean is there, you won't believe it, you won't see it. Because your eyes will be closed to this vastness. They can know only that which is narrow like a well. Third thing to be remembered, and that is, mind always wants to live with inferiors. It is always afraid of the superior. So everybody goes on searching for the inferior friends, wife, husband. Just the inferior than you. So you can feel superior. In India they have a proverb that a camel never wants to come to the Himalayas. That's why he lives in deserts. There he is the Himalaya. And if he comes near the Himalayas, then what will happen to the ego? That's why you escape wherever there is any fear for the ego. If you come to a Buddha, you will escape, because a camel never wants to come to a Himalaya. You will like your desert. At least you are somebody there. Judge Bernard Shaw is reported to have said that if I am not the first in heaven, I would not like to go there. Even hell is preferable if I am first. If I am to be second in heaven, it is not for me. He's saying something about you. Just think, will you be at ease in heaven where you are not the first? And you cannot be, because Jesus will be there, Buddha will be there, they are already occupying the queue. You will be far behind. But in hell there is a possibility of your being first. And it is easier also. You can be in misery, but you would like to be first, the foremost somebody. You would not like to be blissful, but nobody. And this is the problem, only nobodies can be blissful. Somebodies will always be in misery. Because the very feeling that I have to be somebody creates misery. Then you are in competition and conflict. Then there is continuous tension with everybody. Everybody else is the enemy. And the mind always seeks the inferior. It surrounds itself with inferiors. Then you become the supreme most. Look at this tendency. If this persists, you will go on falling and falling and falling, and there is no end to it. Always seek the superior if you are really seeking the truth, because truth is the superior most. If you are seeking the inferior, then finally you will end with some ultimate lie. If you really want to go to the divine, then seek the superior, because the superior is the glimpse of it. Always seek the superior. But then you have to be humble. Then you have to bow down. Then you have to surrender. This is the problem for the ego. For the mind. Mind tends to seek the inferior. That's why mind can never reach to the superior most, the highest peak of life. Mind will finally reach to the hell. Mind is the hell, and no mind is heaven. Now we will try to penetrate this beautiful parable. The autumn floods had come. Thousands of wild torrents poured furiously into the Yellow River. It surged and flooded its banks until, looking across, you could not tell an ox from a horse on the other side. Then the river god laughed, delighted to think that all the beauty in the world had fallen into his keeping. So downhill he swung until he came to the ocean. There he looked out over the waves toward the empty horizon in the east, and his face fell. Gazing out at the far horizon to come to his senses, he came to his senses and murmured to the ocean god, "Well, the proverb is right. He who has got himself 100 ideas thinks he knows more than anybody else. Such a one am I. Only now do I see what they mean by expanse." The Yellow River is one of the greatest rivers in the world, and one of the most dangerous. And of course, when the river is in a flood, autumn flood, and thousands torrents are falling into it, small rivers and rivulets, streams, and it is flooded, it becomes a small ocean in itself. And the river God thought that now there is nobody comparable to me, and the whole beauty of the world has fallen in my keeping. Now I am vast, incomparably vast. There is nobody else who is so vast. This is what is happening to every ego. Every ego is the Yellow River. When you are a child, it is a small current, just at the very source, not very big and vast. Then streams fall into it, many experiences. You gather much knowledge, certificates, money, wealth, prestige, respect. You go on gathering thousands of torrents falling in, and the river goes on becoming vast and vast, bigger and bigger. This is the autumn flood that comes when you are young. Then you think no one is comparable to you. You are incomparable. Then you are filled with the ego, puffed. Everybody in his young age becomes puffed. The autumn flood. And then he thinks, now the beauty of the whole world has fallen into my keeping. You ask any person, whatsoever he says, don't listen. Just look the way he says. He may say, I am a humble man, but look in his eyes. And he is saying, I am the most humble man, there is no comparison to me. He may be saying that I am not so beautiful as others, but look, he is waiting for you to contradict, to say, no, you are wrong. And if you nod and say, yes, you are right, you are creating one enemy more. He was simply diplomatic. What he wanted to say was something else. He wanted to listen it from you. In youth, everyone is in a flood. And then the whole outlook is tinged and colored by the ego. Then you walk, then you talk, behave, relate, but everything is tinged, colored by the ego. Much misery, of course, happens. Because you are thinking yourself that which you are not. And you are believing in the shadow. Soon the flood will recede. The autumn is not going to be forever. You will become old. Torrents will not fall into you. Streams will become dry. Banks will appear. Summer will come. And this vast looking yellow river will become a just tiny stream. You may become just a dry bed of sand and nothing else. It happens in old age. Then one feels very irritated, cheated, as if existence has been cheating him. Nobody has cheated you. You simply magnified yourself foolishly. Your own ego created the whole problem. Now you feel cheated. You cannot find an old man and yet happy. If you can find, live with him. He is a wise man. You can find happy young men. That is nothing. If you can find a happy old man, that's something. Because when the summer has come and the autumn flood is no more and one is happy, he has known something else. He has found some eternal source. When you are young, you have a dance in your feet. That's nothing. That is just the flood. When you are old and everything has been taken back, nobody even remembers you. Nobody bothers about you. You are simply neglected, out of the way thrown, like a rubbish garbage, and happy. It is said, Buddha has said, that when you find an old man and as happy as youth, there is something. Go down to him. Listen and learn from him. In India, this was the tradition, that whenever we will find one old man happy, dancing, we will make him a master. He will move to the forest. He will create a small university around him, a gurukul, a household of the master, and disciples will start pouring from all over the country. In India, we never made a young man a teacher. Just an old man can be a teacher, and that's right. Exceptions may happen, but generally it is right. Only an old man can be a teacher. One who has lived through all seasons of life, who is seasoned, and is still happy and blissful. To be in flood and happy is nothing special. It is ordinary to be happy when the stream is almost dry, when only sins are left, when one's whole body is just a ruin. And to be ecstatic. Alive at the peak of life, to dance is nothing. But when death comes near and you go dancing to meet, then it is something. Then the rare has happened. The extraordinary has entered into the world of the ordinary. Then the divine has penetrated. If you are happy because you are young, you will not be happy for long. Soon your happiness will be shattered. And if you can become aware before it is shattered, it is good. This is the beauty, that if you can become sad while you are young, you will be happy when you will become old. You will become sad, because this is just a flood if you look at it. It is not you. It is the thousand currents falling in you that are giving you an impression that you are vast. Soon, that which is given to you will be taken. And if you can be happy when everything is taken, only then your happiness is unshakable. Then your happiness has become bliss. This is the difference between happiness and bliss. Happiness depends on others. Thousand torrents falling in. Bliss depends just upon you. It is independent. It has no conditions to be fulfilled. It is unconditional. It is simply because of you. It has no causality. Nothing causes it. You are happy with your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your lover. Somebody is causing your happiness. Soon it will be taken away. Because it is the autumn flood. Seasons will change. The wheel of life will go on moving. It will be taken away. That which is caused cannot be forever. That which is uncaused can be forever. Remember that always, whenever you are happy, remember, is it something uncaused or caused? If it is caused, then it is better to be sad. Because it is going to be taken away, it is already on the way. It has already left you. Sooner or later you will realize it has gone. Because causation is part of this world which is in a flux. This dream world that Hindus have called Maya. This illusion which goes on moving like a dream. And if you believe in it, it becomes a nightmare. If you don't believe it, you can discard it. Then you can look at the witness, which is uncaused. The river God became swollen. So downhill he swung until he came to the ocean. And someday or other you will come to the ocean. What is the ocean? Death is the ocean. Vast. Life has source to it. Death has no source. Life has banks to it, sometimes flooded. Then it looks vast. Sometimes not filled, then it becomes a tiny stream. But death has no banks to it. It is oceanic. And just like every river has to come to the ocean, every river of consciousness has come to death. Wherever you are going, whatsoever path you choose, whatsoever direction, it makes no difference. You will reach to the ocean. The ocean surrounds in all directions. You will reach to the death. And near death, all your dreams will be shattered. The whole ego shaking. So downhill he swung until he came to the ocean. There he looked out over the waves towards the empty horizon in the east, and his face fell. That's how old men become sad. Their face falls. Happiness disappears. The jest, the enthusiasm, the dream, everything simply dies. They look and nothing but a shoreless ocean, in which they are going to be merged and dissolved. There will be no more. Every river falling into the ocean feels the same. And every river, it is said, looks back to the days when she was something. Looks back before it falls into the ocean. Remembers the past. The floods, the autumn, the days when she was somebody. But you cannot go back. There is no possibility to go back in time. One has to move always further and further, and every river has to fall. It falls crying, go to the ocean, and sit near a river falling into the ocean, and you will feel such sadness in the river. Every old man, old person starts looking backwards. Old people always go into memories, the days when they were something, somebody. The days when they were loved and respected and honored. They go on again and again, just listening to old men, and you feel them very boring. Why you feel them boring? And why you feel irritated? Because they go on repeating the same story of the old days. Always they start in the good old days. Why the good? Why not the days are good now? No old man can believe that the days are good now. They were always in the past, the golden past, the good old days, when things were like this and that. This is not a question of things, or economical situation, or political situation, nothing. They were young, and everything was good. They were flooded. It happened, one Chief Justice at the Supreme Court of United States went to visit, after he was retired, went to visit Paris. He had been once before also, 30 years before. His old wife was also with him. Looking at Paris, 2-3 days, he became very sad, and he said, we were waiting for this Paris to come and see it. But nothing looks like it was before. The wife laughed and said, everything as it was before, only we are not young. Paris remains the same, but now other rivers are in autumn flood. Your summer time has come. And when you are old, how can the Paris be the same as when you were young? Paris is a symbolic city of the young people, indulging. There are cities in different seasons. Varanasi is the city of the old people. Paris is the city of the young people. Paris indulges, Varanasi renounces. When in India people want to die, they go to Varanasi to live there and to die there. It is the city of the old, the summer time. When you become old, the whole world seems to be old and dying. The world remains the same, only you go on changing. Look and drop your mind, then you are neither young nor old. Then there are no seasons, because the innermost spirit has no seasons to it, no autumn, no summer, nothing. It remains the same. It is eternal. Otherwise, whenever your river will come to the ocean, your face will fall. You will become sad. Sad and burdened with old memories. Thinking about the past, because now there is no future. A child never thinks of the past because there is no past. A child is just fresh, a blank page. Things are going to be written on it, yet nothing is written. He cannot move backwards. He always thinks of the future. Ask a child, and he is always thinking how to grow. How to grow soon and fast. How to become like daddy. And he does not know what is happening to the daddy. In what trouble daddy is, he doesn't know. He wants to become powerful, strong, tall. Somebody soon, he would like that a miracle happens. And he sleeps in the night and in the morning, he is old and grown up. Every child thinks of the future. Childhood thinks of the future, because for childhood there is expanse in the future. 70 years to live. Nothing lived before. There is no past. That's why a child has not much memory. If a child becomes angry, he forgets it immediately. Immediately he can laugh. Because there is not much past which becomes a burden. He goes on forgetting the past. Because his whole energy is moving towards the future. He cannot look back. No child looks back. A young man in youth remains in the present. He is just in the middle. He lives here and now. No need to go to the past, because the present is so beautiful. He is so flooded. The ego is so high. No need to go to the future, because future cannot be better than this. There are old countries, just like old men. For example, India is an old country. It always thinks of the past, ancient ages. There are young countries for America. For example, America. It lives here and now, just this moment. There are young countries. For example, China is a young country now, reborn. It looks at the future. Much is going to happen. Soon, the world will become an utopia. Just like persons, countries move. A young man lives in the present. Everything is so good, nothing can be better. But this cannot continue forever. Soon the old age sets in, and the old man thinks of the past. Mind is either in the past, or in the present, or in the future, because past, present, future are all three of them parts of mind. They are not tenses of time, but parts of mind. But when you drop the mind, you are in eternity. It is neither past, nor future, nor present. You have transcended all three. Then there is no season to you. Then you are sad in your happiness and you are happy in your sadness. Then you are old in your youngness and you are young in your oldness. Then you are a child at the time of death and then you are an old man at the time of birth. It is said about Lao Tzu, the master of Chuang Tzu, that he was born old, 80 years old. He remained in his mother's womb for 80 years. It is a beautiful story. And he was born old with a white beard, white hairs, snow white. This is just the other aspect of the coin. Jesus says, if you are a child again, if you are a child again, you will enter into the kingdom of God. This is one aspect. Lao Tzu has another aspect. He says, if you are born old, you have already entered. But both are the same. And this is the problem for the mind to understand. One who is born old will be a child when he dies. If you are a child when born, you will be old when you die. So either become old when you are born, which is more difficult, very, very difficult, but there are methods. Or die and then become a child. But both are related. Because life and death is a circle. When you die here, you are born somewhere else. If you can die here as a child, fresh, unburdened, innocent, you will be born old. Because you will be so experienced, you will be so wise, you will be old. That's what it means. To be wise from the very first moment. If you die fresh and young, you will be born wise, because wisdom happens in an empty and innocent mind. And if you are born wise, old, you will not move in ordinary foolishnesses that everybody is prone to, and you will remain fresh. Wise. And then there is no death. So a wise man is born only once. All other lives are just preparations. Only once he can come back before his final merging into the universe, before his Mahanirvana. He can come once. If you die almost a child, you will be born once more, but you will be born as an old man. You will be wise from the first day. And then there will be no birth. Then you attain to the birthless and deathless. Gazing out at the far horizon, he came to his senses and murmured to the ocean god, well, the proverb is right. He who has got himself 100 ideas thinks he knows more than anybody else. Such a one am I. Only now do I see what they mean by expanse. When you come to the superior, when you come to the man of Tao, only then you realize what it means to be wise, what it means to be intelligent, what it means to be mature, what it means to be expanding, what it means to be really conscious, total, integrated. When you come to an enlightened person, only then you feel what it means to be here at all. Before it, you move in a dream, shadows. You have never come to the sunlight. You have never been under the sky. You lived into caves, dark caves of the ego. The ocean god replied, "Can you talk about the sea to a frog in a well?" It is impossible, because the language differs. The frog in the well has the language of the well. You must have heard the story. Once a frog from the ocean came, jumped into a well. He got acquainted with the frog in the well. And the well frog asked, "From where you come?" He said, "I am coming from the ocean." The well frog asked, "Is it bigger than this well?" Of course, suspicion in his eyes, doubt in his mind, "How can anything be bigger than this well, where I live?" The ocean frog laughed and said, "It is very difficult to say anything, because there is no measure." The well frog said, "Then I will give you some measure so you can..." He jumped 1/4 in the well, 1/4 space, and said, "Is it that big?" Laughed the ocean frog. He says, "No." Then he jumped 1/2 of the well, said, "Is it that big?" Again laughed the ocean frog and said, "No." Then he jumped 3/4, said, "Is it that big?" Again the ocean frog said, "No." Then he jumped the whole well, the whole length, and said, Now you cannot say no." The ocean frog said, "You may feel hurt, and I don't want to be offensive, but still the answer is no." Then said the well frog, "Get out from here, you liar. Nothing can be bigger than this well. Whenever you doubt, it is always the well frog in you. Nothing can be bigger than you. Nothing can be higher than you. Nothing can be diviner than you. Nothing can be holier than you. No." That's why you go on rejecting Buddhas, Christ. You have to, because they come from the ocean. They bring a message of the immeasurable. And you have your measuring sticks. And you should not be too hard on the well frog, because what he can do, you can have only compassion. You cannot be too hard, because that's all he has known. He has never been to the ocean, so how he can conceive? Hence the compassion of the Buddhas. You go on disbelieving them, and they go on giving their compassion, because they know. What you can do? You have lived in a frog, and for so long. A well frog even looks at the sky, but the sky is also surrounded by his well. It is just a hole. Even the sky is not bigger than his well, because he cannot know that his well is just a window. And the sky is not fixed in the window. but you are standing behind the window, then the same structure of the window becomes the structure of your sky. And you think the sky is same as my window. This is how everybody thinks. And Buddhas cannot do anything else but be compassionate. Jesus died on the cross and still he said, God, forgive these because they don't know what they are doing. This is what that well frog was doing. And the ocean frog must have prayed in his depth of his heart that, God, forgive this frog because he does not know what he is doing and what he is saying. He said, get out from here, you liar. You cannot deceive me. You must have some plans to deceive me. I cannot believe in such an absurdity that anything can be bigger than this well. The ocean god replied, can you talk about the sea to a frog in a well? That's why Buddhas cannot talk what they know. It is impossible to communicate. It is incommunicable. Because languages differ. You have a different pattern of language. In that pattern of language, if it is put, then the ocean will have to be put in a well. And the ocean will not allow. And everything will go false. That's why Buddhas go on saying that whatsoever we say, just by saying becomes untrue. Says Lao Tzu, the truth cannot be said. And that which can be said is no more true. This is the problem, not the truth. You are the problem and your language of the well is the problem. Not truth. Truth can be said. But then two Buddhas are needed to talk about it. And they don't need to talk about it. Because when two Buddhas are there, there is no need to say anything. They sow. They are the truth. There is no need to talk. And whenever there is any need to talk, the problem arises. Can you talk about the sea to a frog in a well? Can you talk about ice to a dragonfly? The dragonfly lives in fire. How can you talk about ice to a dragonfly? She has never known. Ice never existed for her. Fire is her world. You can talk about fire. You cannot talk about the ice. You cannot say that there are things so cold like ice. She will not believe because everything is fire. Can bliss be talked to you? To you who live in the fire of misery and dukkha. Can bliss be talked to you who live in anguish? Who are dragonflies? How can you understand the cool of a Buddha? You cannot understand. How can you understand that in a head of Buddha there are no thoughts moving, no clouds? You don't know. You have not even had a glimpse. Not for a single moment the process of thought has stopped. You know your head as a mad crowd. How can you believe that a Buddha sits simply and there is no thought in the head? That is inconceivable. You live in fire. Buddha lives in a cool, very cool world. And there is no bridge between fire and ice. Unless you become cooler and cooler and cooler, you will not be able to understand. Buddha becomes communicable only when you become more silent and cool. Otherwise, everything is missed. And can you talk about the way of life to a doctor of philosophy? Impossible. And I will tell you that it is possible sometimes to talk about the sea to a well frog. It is possible to talk about eyes to a dragonfly. It is not possible to talk about truth to a philosopher, to a doctor of philosophy. Why? Because the well may be howsoever small, it is still part of the ocean. At least the water is part of the ocean. And howsoever the fire may be opposite to the eyes, they are the degrees of one same phenomena. Heat or cold are not two things, but the same energy. The same energy becomes heat, the same energy becomes cold. The energy is the same, degrees differ. That's why by one thermometer you can measure cold and heat both, because the energy is the same. Where cold becomes heat, can you say? Exactly where? At which degree the cold is no more cold and becomes heat? You cannot say. It depends. You try one simple experiment. You put your one hand, your left hand, on an ice cube, and your right hand near a fire. Let the right hand become hot, let the left hand become cool. Then together put both the hands in a bucket of water and tell me whether it is cool or hot. You will be in a difficulty, because one hand will say it is hot, one hand will say it is cool. It is cold. What it is, cold or hot? They are degrees of the same energy. So I say to you, even to a well frog, it is possible to communicate about the sea. And if the messenger is really inventive, he can create devices to communicate. That's what a Buddha is doing. A Jesus is doing, to create devices to communicate something of the sea to well frogs. Because one thing is common, the water. If one thing is common, then communication is possible. One bridge exists. Even to a dragonfly, something can be communicated about eyes. Even we have to say that it is not fire, something has been said about eyes. If we say it is not hot like the fire, something has been said about the eyes. Negative, of course. That's why all great scriptures are negative. They don't say what truth is, they always say what truth is not, just to make the message meaningful to dragonflies. So we cannot say what the eyes is, but we can say that the eyes is not fire. But this much can be communicated. Even that is impossible, to talk to a philosopher about the way of life, or to talk to a philosopher about existence, even if the philosopher may be an existentialist. Then too it is impossible to talk about existence, because in a word, and the corresponding reality, there is no bridge. A rose and the word rose are not related in any way. All relationship is arbitrary. What is the relationship between the word rose, R-O-S-E, with a rose? If there is some relationship, then you cannot call it gulab. There are 300 languages in the world and 300 words for rose. There is no relationship. All relationship is arbitrary. Cold is related with heart. Well is related with the ocean. The relationship, howsoever distant, but is there, real, not arbitrary, between a word and reality. There is no relationship. They are not related at all. So you can have your own words, a private language. You can call anything. If you like to call something else, the rose will not fight in a court. And nobody can prove that their word is more correct than yours. Nobody can prove. Because no word is more correct or less correct. Words are irrelevant. They are not related. And a philosopher lives in words. A philosopher is the falsest thing in the existence. And the more you become philosophic, the less you live. Then you think about love, you never love. Then you think about God, you never become divine. Then you go on talking and talking and talking, and your whole energy is wasted in words, not a single moment to enter into existence. Chuang Tzu says, be aware of all philosophies, because the base is one, that they depend on words, and the reality is not a word. Move into the real. You are real. Existence is real. Move into the real. Don't create a wall of words between you and the reality. Otherwise, it is impenetrable. You will be closed in within your wall. And then it will become almost impossible to come out of it. Don't be a philosopher. And everybody is a philosopher. It is difficult to find a man who is not a philosopher. Some philosophers are good, some bad, but everyone is a philosopher. Someone more logical, someone less, but everybody is a philosopher. Drop out of that trip, the trip of philosophy. Only then you enter the real, the existential. Enough for today.